You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. You know, the history of infrastructure projects in the first half of the 20th century, it's often quite dark. Some of those projects, particularly the highways that crisscrossed the country, they pummeled through black and brown communities without listening at all to input from the people who lived in those neighborhoods. And that history is not just about what was done, but often what wasn't done as well. Poorer communities must constantly put up with things like dirty air, unclean water, inferior public parks, rec facilities, and libraries. But these days, more public authorities are becoming aware of this sordid history and are at least listening to those who have been and are currently harmed by such things. Some public officials are trying to even reverse inequalities through the projects that once similarly created them. That's where we want to continue the conversation here on Detroit Today. What is the right way to think about infrastructure? What is the way to think about infrastructure that brings about equality, fairness, racial justice? Increasingly, public officials are actually weighing their decisions in that context and making decisions that will push us toward equality instead of pulling us away from it. Paul Ajiba is the director of the Michigan Department of Transportation, and he's somebody who, from the jump, has been talking about the power of infrastructure and decisions about infrastructure to bring about equality. Paul, welcome to Detroit Today.
Hi. Good morning, Stephen H. How are you today?
Yeah, it's great. It's great to hear your voice. So I want to start with the past before we get to what you're doing now in the present. How much are you talking and discussing and interacting with communities, particularly poor, browner communities, that have been hurt by government infrastructure projects in the past?
I think you said it well in your introductory remarks, Stephen. In the past, we've always felt we are the government, we're the highway admin, we're the highway department. We just go in the community. We think this putting a roadway here is the best way for the people of the state. We just go ahead and purchase property and put a freeway there. I-375, again, I think you've heard a lot of the discussion going on about that. It's a good example of that.
Mm-hmm.
The Black Bottom neighborhood at the time was a very thriving community. You had a lot of businesses there owned by Black folks where we came in 1959, roughly to 1965. We built I-375 that goes into the city of Detroit, and we displaced a lot of businesses and homes. I think paying them the true value of that business or home is one thing, but what we never thought about is the residual effect of those businesses not being able to transfer that generational wealth to the next generation, to their kids, where they can take up that business and grow it and make it bigger and obviously employ people in our community. So the new way of thinking is this is not the right way to do things. We have to engage the community that we are trying to displace. For instance, the Gordie Howe Bridge project that's going on right now, that project, we not only purchased properties, in some cases we relocated our residents to a much better neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, paying somebody money for the cost of that property may not be enough for them to be able to purchase, almost similar property somewhere else because you're basing on the appraised value of that property in that area.
Yeah.
But that may not be enough money for them to purchase property somewhere else. So we even relocated properties to other locations, again, to continue that social justice piece, understanding that, if you buy that that business out and they cannot transfer that wealth, you just totally cut off a generational wealth. So we are more socially conscious of that now. The Woodward Loop project is another good example in Pontiac, where it's a one-way loop that, you know, in those days, General Motors was there. People just, you know, it's a way to get in and out. We finally realized that maybe this is not the best way because it doesn't connect your neighborhood to the downtown Pontiac. We decided we're going to make that a two-way roadway, and we're investing money in trying to do that. It's in the design process now. Hopefully, that project will get underway very soon.
So, Paul, I want to have you talk just a little about how hard it is, maybe, to reestablish trust in communities where decisions before were made without community input and against community interest. I mean, we have such a rich history and kind of awful history of that here in Michigan, and wonder if one of the things you have to overcome is just skepticism from people when you say, hey, we want to do this in a way that is good for you and good for your community.
Oh, you hear that every time we go to a community to have public meetings. You hear people say, well, we don't trust you because you did this, you did that way back then. Mm-hmm. And I think what the way you gain the trust of the community is engaging some of the community leaders in the decision-making process. This is not us coming in dictating what we are going to do. This is going to be an inclusive process. We want your opinion. And as you, every step of the way while you're doing the planning and the design of that project, you're including them, you're going back and sharing your thoughts with them, the progress schedule, I think it helps to slowly build trust. I will tell you, even the I-375 right now, I think we're still in that building trust process, even though the project is, we've got a good understanding of what we would like to put back in there. Building that trust process is not going to complete till we finish the project and they actually see that a lot of the things that they recommended is incorporated in the final product that they see out there. It's a building block.
Mm-hmm.
You have to work hard at it to make sure that everybody feels included in the decision-making process.
Yeah. I want to welcome another voice to this conversation as well, as somebody who's also deeply involved in this effort to try to bring the lens of equality to development and infrastructure. John Kramer is president of OHM Advisors. John, welcome to Detroit Today. Oh, I'm sorry, we don't have John quite yet. We're still working on that. We will have John in just a little bit. Paul, I want to come back to you.
Sure.
While we're waiting for John. Talk a little about how MDOT is taking its money and federal dollars to build highways with small and diverse firms around the state. How closely are you tracking which businesses get those dollars? This is another question about equity that comes up with infrastructure.
Oh, yes. First, I have to give my boss, Governor Whitmer, a lot of credit. Mm-hmm. When she came in, that was part of her focus area to say, okay, how do we make sure that when we put businesses, when we award contracts, we're making sure that equity is a big part of that. We have what you call a DBE, that's Disadvantaged Business Enterprise. We have an office here that actually deals with that, going out in the community, recruiting minority businesses to be part of MDOT contracting process. We have a goal that we set every year, and I'm happy to say that this last year, 2021, is probably the first time we've exceeded that goal in a long time in the history of MDOT. Mm-hmm. And that's because of a lot of work by a lot of people in MDOT to mm-hmm. make sure that we've been inclusive. And I will also give the construction industry some credit as well. They've worked with us to try and make sure that we understand that being inclusive is a good thing. Having a diverse workforce and diverse contracts out there, businesses working together, helps everybody.
Yeah. We do have John Kramer of OHM Advisors with us now. John, welcome to the program.
Yeah, can you hear me, guys?
I sure can.
Excellent.
Thanks for joining us. So I want to have you talk about how OHM is approaching projects, and specifically with projects in the East Warren and Cadieu area of Detroit. How are you making sure to center residents in the development of that area? So first, tell us what's going on with development there, and then tell us how you're trying to include the people who live in that area in the decisions and in the process.
Excellent. Well, we're very excited to be working with the City of Detroit and the East Warren Cadieu neighborhood on what they call a framework plan. And one of the things that we've learned, through time is that it's so important to put the people and the people of the neighborhoods first. I heard a little bit as I was joining, some of the mistakes of the past that were made. And the way that we know to kind of fix those and right those is to really get engaged with strategic partnerships from the neighborhood. So in this case, I think we drew from, there was some philanthropic contributions and public funding from Detroit Strategic Neighborhood Fund. And this was designed to continue the city's renaissance through focused neighborhood redevelopment. And that initiative kind of aimed to drive economic vitality, enhance the quality of life in targeted neighborhoods through efforts that are centered on the rehabilitation and restoration of vacant housing and the introduction of mixed-use development at opportunity sites, and a pretty big focus on parks and public spaces. But the East Warren Cadieu area, which encompasses the neighborhoods of Morningside and East English Village and Cornerstone Village, it really offers an extensive opportunity for revitalization due to its strong community leadership, as well as the commercial district along East Warren, and existing assets such as the Alger Theater and Baldock Park. And the city, we partnered with the city to help lead the development of a neighborhood framework plan that really outline near-term capital improvement projects as well as financing strategies and policies to bring plan recommendations forward.
Yeah. And what's the reaction, John, that you're getting from residents in the area? We were talking with Paul Ajiba about the skepticism that lots of people have because of the history of development and infrastructure, not just in this city, but all over the country, and the ways in which it has overlooked people who live in neighborhoods, and especially Black and brown people who've often felt like they were on the outside. So you're on the front lines of that conversation right now. Tell us what the feedback looks like.
For sure. And you're right on. Although on one hand, people are excited to be heard, which is very important. And they appreciate that their feedback is being listened to. But there's also that issue of trust that goes way back, as you mentioned. So there's a little bit of, they're going to want to see what really happens at the end of the day. And are we really going to take their feedback into account? And that's just something that the design industry and cities across the country are going to have to prove. That they're able to do that, and that certainly is the intent.
So, John, before we have to break again, I'm really glad you've been able to join us. I wonder if you can talk just a little about what other design firms and developers ought to be keeping in mind, just maybe a short list of things about how to front the things that you guys are fronting in this process, and how to build that trust that people don't have in the process right now in our city. I wonder essentially if you can come up with a tip list for your fellow designers and developers.
Sure, I'll try to do that. we consider ourselves the community advancement firm, and our goal is to put people first. And that is just super critical. When you put people first, that's a central component of what we're talking about today, and why it's not only critically important to listen and understand the needs of the communities we serve, but also to value the differences in both perspective and voice, because every infrastructure decision that is made has the potential to have an overlooked community impact, just like we were talking about earlier with Director Ajaba. When you look at what was done back in the 50s and 60s, oftentimes it was about efficiency and moving cars or traffic from point A to B. We're smarter than that now, and we know that you really need to look at that full impact. Where do people want to eat? Do they want to walk to work, bike to work? Where do they socialize? Where do they get their hair cut? All of these types of things, we know to take that into account. And you can get a lot of crucial information from residents and stakeholders, businesses and community leaders in advance of starting a project. So it's really in that upfront planning that's critical.
Okay. When we come back, we are going to continue this conversation about infrastructure and equity. I want to thank John Kramer of OHM Advisors for joining us. It was really great to have his voice in this conversation. We're going to keep Paul Ajaba, who's director of the Michigan Department of Transportation, and we want to get to your calls next and your social media comments. Call and tell us how you think infrastructure projects can bring about equity in communities. Do you want better roads, public transportation, parks, or more walking or bike paths? How should those things take shape in your communities? And how much do you think you should be part of the process of discussing those things? I want to hear from you here in the city of Detroit, as well as all over Metro Detroit, as these are the kind of projects that unfold all over our community. As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to social media and put comments there. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. My guest is Paul Ajaba. He's director of the Michigan Department of Transportation, and we're talking about the ways in which Michigan is attempting to address inequality through its approach to infrastructure. Think of all the big projects that that unfold around our city and all around our state, and the ways in which they affect neighborhoods, for instance. Very often in the past, people were not part of that process. People were the object, or maybe even the victims of the ideas that public officials had about those kinds of things. There's a different approach today, and I want to know from you how you think that should look in your community. What are the things that you wish Michigan Department of Transportation or developers or other people who are changing communities ought to hear from you? How do you think they ought to interact with you about what's going on in your neighborhood? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to the WDET Facebook page for comments there or to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today. And we'll work you into the conversation. I want to read a couple of social media comments. Big Neo says, the biggest problem is access to jobs without widespread mass transit. Citizens are forced to stay within a certain radius if they don't have a car. Light rail on the old rail lines should become a reality to help citizens get around. Paul, I want to pause there and give you a chance to react to that. Public transit is a nightmare here in Southeast Michigan. It has been my entire life. That's now more than 50 years. What ways can MDOT and the other parts of state government start to deal with the inequalities that are driven by really poor mass transit.
I agree, Stephen. I think that's one of the key areas that we need to focus on and try to improve. I would tell you, finding a way to maybe get the RTA funding back on the ballot will be a good first step. I remember a few years ago, I don't know if you remember the story of the walking man, the guy that gets up at 5 a.m. and sure. walks so many just to get to the first bus to get to work. I think us as a whole region, we missed an opportunity to really address the issue.
Mm-hmm.
When that story came out, somebody bought him a car, and the story went away.
Mm-hmm.
That was, to me, taking the easy way out. Yeah, perhaps so many more like him out there in our community that doesn't have access to transportation to get to jobs. So instead of focusing on how do we create that opportunity, we solved that problem and everybody just kind of went back to their corners. So creating a good transportation system, to me, it has to be inclusive. People think only poor people use public transit, and that's really not the case. If you make it accessible, believe me, the young generation don't want to drive. They would probably rather get in a bus and go downtown or go wherever they want to go to work. I tell people when I go to D.C. for meetings, I don't get on Uber. I just go across the street, get on that metro. Takes me into downtown D.C., but within that period, while I'm riding that metro, I can check my emails, return phone calls, and do a lot of other things. To me, not that I couldn't do that in the Uber, but I just wanted to experience how it feels to have a good transit system.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's been elusive, as I said, for my entire life here in Michigan. Michael on Twitter says, it sounds great to work with the people in the community, but how is this accomplished? What method is used to get input from people in the neighborhoods? What process is used to confirm neighborhood input is taken into account? I think that's a really important question, Paul, because often, even when you do everything that you might think of to try to include people in the conversation about what's happening to them, there's still some dissatisfaction. So what do you do to make sure that, hey, we really did make every effort we could to get input here, and we came up with a decision that is just, even if everybody is not necessarily happy with it?
That is true. In most cases, we're not going to satisfy everybody. But at least as long as people walk out of that process and knowing that we did consider their opinion, I think most times it goes a long way. I'll give you a good example. We did a gateway project when I was in Metro, the I-75 going into Ambassador Bridge into Canada years ago. That's another freeway that separated the Mexican town years ago. When we were looking at rebuilding that whole project, it was about a $200-something million project. We had an extensive public engagement. One of the recommendations that came out of that public engagement was to put, that big pedestrian cable bridge, bridge on Bagley that connects Mexican town to Detroit. That's another one of those great suggestions that came out of those public meetings. A lot of the things we're doing on I-94 right now, it's about a $2 billion investment. We've been having public meetings. I can't even tell you how many we've had up to date. When I was in Metro, I used to attend those. So we get an input. There's some great suggestions out there, and there might be some that we just could not accommodate because of environmental reasons or whatever the regulation is, but at least people feel better knowing that they were heard. And we do give them feedback as to why we cannot incorporate their ideas into the final product.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Paul Adjaba, it's always really great to have this conversation with you. Before I let you go, I've only got about a minute and a half left, but I do want to give you a chance to talk about this I-375 issue, the idea to essentially pave that over and bring back a neighborhood to that space. Where are we with all of that, and is that really going to happen?
Yes, it goes back to the trust issue. People, they engage in the process, but you have to continue to build that trust until the project is completed. Yes, that project is going to happen. We are going all the way from Atwater, which is obviously, you know, Atwater's by the river.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to take out that Jefferson Avenue Bridge. We're going to take out Mac and a whole lot of those bridges along that way and make it a boulevard all the way to I-75. We are in the environmental review and approval process right now. The document has been submitted to the Federal Highway Administration. We're hoping by the end of this month or next month, we'll get an approval from the feds. After that, then we'll get into the full design process. I think that the city has done a great job engaging us and the community and, quite frankly, helping us be the intermediary. I think that the mayor's, it starts with leadership. The governor and the mayor is very interested in this project, and we're doing everything we can to launch the project.
Yeah. Okay, well, we look forward to seeing how that all unfolds. Again, Paul Adjaba, thanks very much for being with us on Detroit Today.
Thank you, Stephen H. Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm.
Have a good day.
You too. That's going to do it for us today. Come back tomorrow when we're going to talk about how suburban school districts are dealing with the latest iteration of the COVID pandemic. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.